If you'd like, be turning to Joshua chapter 1. I got a letter from Andre this week, and if I remember, I'll print it in next week's bulletin, but he said something that touched me. Andre can read and speak English. For a period of time, he taught English in a Russian school, and so he reads the bulletin that we upload every week, and I suspect he listens to the sermon. And he wrote this past week, he had read the article I had in last week's bulletin on collateral beauty. I got that phrase from my friend Dana Mars Carroza in a discussion she was giving for her and her husband's entity, Sacred Selections. They help Christians find children to adopt. And during her discussion, Dana used that phrase, collateral beauty, and I thought, what a wonderful way to talk about grace. Grace is love's collateral beauty. Well, Andre read that article, and in his email to me, he said that he engages in collateral love by praying specifically for every individual he sees mentioned in the bulletin each week. And I just thought that was a touching statement, that one of the ways that he joins with us in our work here is by praying for us by name. When he sees, maybe I need to put the names of everybody here in the congregation in the bulletin to make sure everyone's covered. But I was very touched by Andre saying that. And I will try to remember to put his entire letter in the bulletin next week. In Genesis, Israel was born. In Exodus, Israel was chosen. In Numbers, Israel was tested. In Leviticus, Israel was brought nigh by blood. In Deuteronomy, Israel was instructed. But in Joshua, Israel conquered. And I want us to look at the early verses of Joshua, because there's a lesson in them for us. Israel conquered, and they conquered the promised land in spite of the fact that there were tremendous challenges ahead of them. God said in Genesis 17:8, I'm going to give you a land for an everlasting possession, but for Israel to actually possess it, there were some things that Israel had to do. And in the very second verse of Joshua 1, we're introduced to a crisis during the history of Israel, to a great challenge they face. Verse 1, now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. I've often wondered if Dickens had this verse in mind when he sat down to write A Christmas Carol, because the very first phrase, very first sentence in Christmas Carol is, Marley was dead. Jacob Marley, Scrooge's partner in business, Marley was dead as a doornail. And here the first thing that God says to Joshua is that Moses was dead. And that was a time of crisis for Israel. I mean, the crisis that Moses' death precipitated in Israel was probably as great, if not greater, than when word went out that Lincoln was dead. Think about all the people then who were pinning their hopes for freedom and other things on Lincoln. Just because Lincoln believed in emancipation didn't mean everybody believed in it. Just because Lincoln believed all men were created equal didn't mean everyone in his cabinet believed it, or his vice president believed it. And to have someone who carries all your hopes and aspirations suddenly die can really create a challenge, create a great crisis. Moses was the only leader they had ever known. He was their George Washington. He loved them. They loved him. And now he was gone. And what's going to happen? Well, verse 2 tells us, God says to Joshua, I want you to get up and go. Arise and go. Moses may be dead, Joshua, but I'm not. And there are things to do, and it's time to get after those things. So, I want to talk about the practical lessons from Joshua chapter 1, the first few verses this morning. I think it's significant before we get to the practicalities of the passage to just note something about what we're reading here. We've been studying in the Epistle to the Romans about legalism, the law, and about the gospel and grace. The law came by Moses, John tells us in John chapter 1. Moses was the symbol of the legalistic means of salvation. And we've been talking about legalism, what it cannot do, what it does, what it cannot do. And sometimes it's tough trying to understand everything Paul says in the book of Romans and in other books about the passing of the law. But here in the end of Deuteronomy and the start of Joshua, we've got it illustrated. Moses was the symbol of the law. Did Moses go into the promised land? Moses dies short of the promised land, and I think that is an illustration of the instruction that Paul gives us in Romans. The law, a legalistic system, cannot take us into the promised land. So Moses was dead. Who did God select to succeed him? He selected Jesus. You're saying, that's not what my Bible says. My Bible says he selected Joshua. Joshua is simply the Hebrew way of saying Jesus. They are the same name. In fact, in the King James, in Hebrews chapter 4, Joshua is referred to as Jesus there. Thou shalt call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins. The word Joshua, the word Jesus means Savior. It means Jehovah saved. The law was a revealer. The law revealed right and wrong, but the law was not a redeemer. And Moses, following his sin, could not even enter into the promised land. Who led Israel into the promised land? It was Jesus. And I really think that what we're looking at here at the end of Deuteronomy, start of Joshua, is an illustration. And an illustration is always worth 1,000 explanations. We've got an illustration of what the law could not do and of what Jesus did. But I'm not thinking theology this morning. I'm thinking practicality. Israel probably thought the death of Moses was the end of the book. But it wasn't. It was just the end of a chapter. And there may be times in our life where someone dies and we think, that's it, I can't go on, that's the end. No. When someone dies, you put a comma, you don't put a period. It's not the end of the sentence. And there are four things I want to say from Joshua chapter 1, verse 1 through 7. And the first two involve considerations in verse 2. Here are the two considerations, and then we're going to look at two corollaries to the second consideration. The two considerations are these. People die, but life goes on. And if we're going to go on in life successfully, we have to go with God, and we've got to have grit. People die. Moses is dead. Life goes on. Arise and go. And verses 3 to 5, I'll be with you. Go with God. Verses 6 and 7, but you've got to have grit. You've got to have courage. Be strong and have courage. And that's how you deal with the passing of a person, with the passing of an era. When the old is fading away and the new is commencing, starting up. Realize that life consists of chapters coming to an end. Moses is dead, but life goes on. Let's talk about each of these four items here. At the end of Deuteronomy, chapter 34, verse 5. If you're open to Joshua, you ought to be able to see the end of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 34, verse 5. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. You know, often commentators, when they get to Deuteronomy 34, ask the question, did Moses write this chapter? I mean, we read about stuff that happens after he died. And many think that Joshua may have written chapter 34, and that Moses' death, the account of his death in chapter 34, is really the start to the book of Joshua. Well, I don't know if that's right or not. I've known people who have planned their own funerals. Have you ever known someone who picked out the songs, picked out the speaker, picked out the passage they want read, have just scheduled their entire funeral? Now, Moses, as a prophet, wrote about things in Deuteronomy that would not occur till hundreds of years in the future. If he could write, by the inspiration of God, of things that far off, God could probably inspire him to write about his own death. So, I don't know who wrote the end of Deuteronomy, whether Moses or Joshua. But it's sort of a sad scene here in verse 5. Moses died and he was buried in a valley, verse 6, in the land of Moab opposite Beth Peor, but no one knows his grave to this day. A fellow by the name of Cecil Francis Alexander wrote some lines about that. I'm just going to read the first stanza. You know, I've joked before about preachers, if they're going to have a sermon, need 3 points in a poem. Well, I usually have a poem. I often have 3 points. That's the number of the Godhead. That's the number of three just seems like a nice, round, even number for points in a sermon. But I've got a poem today, and it comes from Cecil Francis Alexander. It's called The Burial of Moses by Nebo's Lonely Mountain, on this side Jordan's wave, in a vale in the land of Moab, there lies a lonely grave. And no man knows that sepulcher, and no man saw it e'er, for the angels of God upturned the sod and laid a dead man there. Moses died in the land of Moab, and no one knows where. And that had to be a hard thing for Israel. People die. That's a hard thing in life. It's hard because people we love die. Now you can look at the obituaries any day of the week and read about people who've died, and you're not moved at all. It doesn't bother you at all. You never give their death a second thought. But for someone you love to die. And one of the wonders of the Bible is how well it reflects our lives. Moses was precious to the people of Israel. They loved him. And he was the one who died. And that left a void. I mean, that left a hole in Israel. I suspect from their standpoint, they're asking or thinking, this could not have come at a worse moment. We're getting ready for D-Day, the invasion of Canaan. That place where the last report we got from our spies, it was full of giants. And compared to them, we're like grasshoppers. And now Moses has led us right up to the launch point. And we're getting ready to go in. His death could not have come as a worse time. And we can think that about anyone near to us who died. This could not have happened at a worse time. We need them. Without them, what are we going to do? How are we going to survive? How are we going to get through? And yet, it was at this point that Moses died. There's never a good time for a loved one to die. I'll just tell you that. There's never a good time for it. There is a translation that says this in Deuteronomy 34, verse 5. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab by the kiss of God. Now, I don't know if that's a good translation of the Hebrew, but it's sure a good thought. You know, parents put their children to bed, and often what do? They give them a good night kiss. You're going to sleep, but everything is going to be all right. Well, maybe that's the idea behind God taking His servant up on Mount Nebo, showing him all of the promised land, and then he dies, and it's God who buries him. Maybe God did give Moses a kiss. And so people die. That's the first fact of the book of Joshua. Second fact is, life goes on. Now, Joshua's in a tough situation. He's been Moses' lieutenant, his right-hand man, but D-Day is just ahead. Eisenhower has died. And there are other capable leaders in the army, but Eisenhower was the leader, the planner, the one who pulled it all together. And Joshua isn't even allowed to fly the flag at half-staff for a month. He wasn't allowed to experience any period of mourning, although I'm sure he was mourning, kind of like Ezekiel when God came to the prophet Ezekiel and he said, Ezekiel, I'm going to take from you that which you love more than anything else. And Ezekiel said, that evening my wife died. And God tells Ezekiel, when I do it, you're not to mourn, you're not to plan a funeral, you're to get up tomorrow morning and go out and preach. And that's what Ezekiel did. When you hear the voice of the lion, you do what the lion tells you to do. And Joshua's in the same situation. We've got work to do, Joshua, and I expect you to do your part. Now, there are times we might want to just check out of life because of what's happened. Someone's died, someone's gotten sick, we've lost someone, our heart's been broken. We just want to check out of life. But folks, life is going to go on whether we like it or not. One of Dickens' most famous characters, Charles Dickens, did not write about specific individuals. He wrote about personalities. You know, people can share the same characteristics. And the characters in his books were composites of people who shared certain characteristics, and one of his most famous characters was Miss Havisham in Great Expectations. Miss Havisham was kind of a wallflower. The boys didn't ask her out much. She didn't have much of a social life until one young man came to town one day and took note of her and proposed to her, and she accepted and they planned the wedding. And she was going to do it upright. And then word came, as she's getting ready to go down to the ceremony, word came that he's gone. He's left. He's not following through with the marriage. She had one shoe on and was getting ready to put the other on when she got that news. She never wore the other shoe again. She was already in her wedding gown. She never took it off. She stopped all the clocks at the precise time that she got the news. She just checked out of life. She pulled the shades down on the windows. It was always dark in the house. Over the years, the mice got in and ate all the cake, carried it off. And the picture of Miss Havisham is the picture of a bitter, lonely, pitiful woman who could not accept the fact that even when your heart's broken, life goes on. And I know people like that. They've lost a parent, they've lost a spouse, they've lost a child. Jacob, when he heard that Joseph was dead, refused to be comforted. He just refused to accept it. And that's how we can decide to live life. But life goes on. I mean, we cannot stop moving. Joshua, Moses is dead. Now get moving. We're moving whether we want to move or not. If the astronomers are right, sitting here right now in this building, we're all moving faster than the speed of sound. As the earth spins, we're moving over 1,000 miles an hour. Just sitting here. That's how God designed life. It keeps moving. And we can decide to move with it. Or we can do that which is a living death and decide to stop living. Now, if we decide to move on, if we make that decision, verses 3 through 7 says we're to move on with God and with grit. Let me read verses 3 through 5. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and to the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. And so God says to all of us, God's got plans for us. He had plans for our parents. He had plans for our spouse. Plans for our He's got plans for us. And He will help us achieve the blessings that He's got in store for us. He's not going to forsake us. Turn to Hebrews chapter 11. Let me show you something really interesting here. Hebrews chapter 11, the great chapter on faith. Example after example after example of Old Testament individuals who by faith worship God, work for God, walk with God, please God, whom God was not ashamed to be known as their God. In Hebrews chapter 11, there are 7 verses dedicated to Moses. A few more dedicated to Abraham. But from verse 23 through verse 29, that's all Moses. And what was accomplished in his life by faith. But look at verse 30. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. Not a word said about Joshua. By faith, Moses did this, Moses did that. He was a great man, no doubt. But Joshua leads Israel across the Jordan. They go up and they walk around Jericho once a day for 6 days, 7 times the 7th day, and the walls fall down, and Joshua's name is not mentioned. That's because it wasn't Joshua who pulled the walls down, it was God. Great victory for Israel. Great victory without Moses. Great victory. Even though Joshua was leading, it was God who was with Israel. And we need to have the faith in God that allows us in verse 6 and 7 to have courage. Verse 6, be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper in whatever you do. Be strong. That's the task ahead of us when we've lost someone. When a crisis has come because someone's died, we must be strong. With God's help, we can. We've got to make up our minds. We're not going to be destroyed by what happened. We're not going to live a diminished life. We're not going to hide from life. We're not going to run from it. God's got work for us to do. There are people that He's trying to reach through us. There are tasks He wants accomplished through us. But that takes our willingness. That takes us volunteering. We're not drafted into it. We volunteer for the job. And we need the courage to follow through. People die. People get sick. People end up in terrible situations, but life goes on. Many years ago, I used to go out to the base every day at noon and play basketball for 30, 45 minutes. I got to know the military personnel who were there playing. And we played basketball with the senior Catholic chaplain. Great guy. I forget his name. He was only about 5'5", but just a great fella. He and I kind of became friends. One day, the game I was in finished, and I'm leaving. I'm going to the locker room to get my stuff. I walk out, and there he is playing in the next game. Got home, and it was within an hour somebody called me to tell me he had died, just minutes after I had left. He died of a heart attack. He had just been to the doctor the week before. The doctor gave him a clean bill of health. And I missed being there when he fell to the court by just minutes. The next day, I put on a shirt and tie and I went to the gym when I'd normally go to play basketball, thinking that the others would be there, you know, to talk about him, to remember, sort of somber. I walked into that gym, they're all playing basketball. I look like a preacher. And they're all playing basketball. And at first I thought, well, boy, they're not very sympathetic. They're not very respectful of what happened. But then I realized basketball goes on. Life goes on. They had a better grip on it maybe than I did. And I've never forgot that. And so the next day I'm out playing basketball. And we've got to get into the game. Turn to Hebrews chapter 4. We'll close with this. Hebrews chapter 4. Chapter 3 is talking about Moses. But chapter 4 is talking about Joshua. Verse 8. And the King James here says, "For if Jesus..." And my New King James Version says, "For if Joshua," but in the margin it says Jesus. Same name. "For if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterward have spoken of another day. There remains therefore a rest for the people of God." Moses led Israel out. Joshua led them in. Conversion always involves a coming out and a going in. Moses couldn't finish the job. Joshua finished it. He led them in. But Joshua did not give them the ultimate rest. The ultimate rest is that spoken of by the greater Joshua, who said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Moses, by the law, didn't enter the promised land, but Moses got to the promised land. You know how he got there? Atop the Mount of Transfiguration, Jesus brought him there. Moses and Elijah appeared in glory with Christ, not by the law, but by Christ. And the same Christ will be with us. Hebrews 13:6, we don't need to fear. We can boldly say, "The Lord is my helper. I will not fear what life shall do to me." The text says, "I will not fear what man shall do to me." But with God as our helper, we'll not fear what life, no matter how devastating, terrible, depressing, sad it is, we will not fear what life can do to us. And with that conviction and in that courage, we can arise and get on with life.